just okay. speak normally.
Okay. And if my voice falls too soft, just say louder. I think everybody can hear. This is a lovely room, by the way.
Isn't it nice?
First of all, I just want to repeat how grateful I am to be here and to be with Connie and knowing this consciousness or being exposed to this consciousness, like, oh, it's going to be great. So I'm really happy to be here. And the drive over was really lovely. It was cool and not much traffic. I came from D.C. and I just rolled down the windows and thought, oh, this is lovely. You know, I'm going here and it's not too early. So I'm just, everything was in divine order for me this morning. Everything always is in divine order, but this morning I was really conscious of it. I just want to share some ideas about these wonderful principles that are very amazing and very simple and also very challenging sometimes in living them out the best that we can. And in other words, what is it that is ours to do? What is it that is mine to do? One of the things that's been true for me is getting the information and then turning that into knowledge, you know, sort of putting that together and turning it into knowledge and just hoping and praying that it turns into wisdom at some point, wanting to embody the principles. And if you're anything like me, getting a real clear understanding here of what this is all about and what the principles are and then thinking that I know it, and then beginning to believe it, and then at any moment maybe coming into knowing, which is the gift. And so one of the things that I think is a biggie is that wanting to know what is ours to do sometimes can get us into trouble of pushing with the will, thinking that I know how to do this, I know what is mine to do, and then wanting to control all the situation, the circumstances and the situations, all the events, all the people, everything involved, so that it works the way I understand it's supposed to be working. And so, according to what I believe Holmes is saying in these two chapters, the chapter on transcending previous conditions and then understanding and misunderstanding, kind of put those together because they really did run together for me. Is that the will, that is this thing of wanting to fix, wanting to structure, wanting to save, wanting to obey that helping impulse, does not really get us to what we recognize as home. And I think he's saying that. And in these two chapters, he's emphatically driving home what ultimately will deliver us. And this is not anything that you don't already know. This is just filtered through me this morning because these are the ideas and this is how I massage them. Okay, so I won't tell you anything that you don't already know. And even if you haven't already heard it or read it, you really do know it. It's just that it gets to resonate with all of us at the same time. So what I think he's really pushing about or really driving home, the thing that will ultimately deliver us is love and law. Love and law. God is love. And God is law. Love is the divine givingness, and law is the way. So I want to talk about love, the givingness, and the movement we make to embody it. Love is the divine givingness. And so the divine givingness is where I'd like to sort of launch into. I had a conversation with, just a brief chat with Connie a little before you came, and she was talking about giving away some things. I was like, oh, that's my whole talk. So we don't really need to have that. And then you said that about, well, you know, I haven't really shared all my songs because I'm preaching to myself. And I'm like, well, that's what this is. That's what this is. So divine givingness, as I understand it, is first of all eternal. It has no beginning. It has no end. Everything visible and invisible springs from that forever. And I think we experience it as a pouring out of this never-ending, continuous pouring out to us everything in this realm forever. So it's eternal. It is also impersonal. It has no attachment to any outcome because it is the outcome. So I see it as impersonal. I see it as unconditional. So there's nothing to do, there's nothing to deserve, there's nothing to earn. It's unconditional. And I see it as self-evident good, meaning that it's self-explanatory. It unfolds as good. There is no opposite of that. It's self-evident good. So those four things are the way that I personally take in the divine givingness that love is. And we are that. We have all of that. The givingness is innate in us, and we have that. When we allow it, it does flow through us as us. It's innate in us. It is our natural state. So, how do we get beyond the undesirable circumstances that we've already manifested? How do we get beyond what we set up and thought we were going to live out in the happy state and it didn't work out? It failed or whatever. How do we swim in the peaceful waters where there is no undertow that's pulling us in a direction that we don't desire to go in? How do we know that we're in that peaceful water? Holmes gives us in these two readings the absolute answer. And I repeat what we've heard for many times, love is the only answer to everything. So he's telling us that. Yes, love is the answer to every question. In our readings today, he says, ultimately, it is all about love and law. So I'm going to quote just a few of the things that he says. He says, first, we should come to know the law and see how it works. So know it and see how it works. So we can probably all give our version of what it is. You know, we see what we believe. We manifest whatever is we hold in mind. We experience whatever we focus on. So we pretty much kind of, I can really tell you the law, you can probably give it right back to me, and so we kind of know it, and occasionally in my life, and I suspect I'm not the only one, I say, oh my goodness, it's working! Oh, it's amazing! You know, when in fact it's always working. It's always working. He also says about this reaping and sowing and reaping, you know, am I going to have to reap everything that I've sown? He says, under certain conditions, we will not have to suffer what we have sown under certain conditions. And the conditions, a changed attitude is the condition, a changed attitude. It means that we must stop thinking and acting in the wrong way. Well, how do you do that? You know, that comes up from some part of me is like, okay, well, I know that's what has to happen. I understand this. And sometimes I can say, amen, that is so right, and I got it. And then something happens, and I think, you know, how do I change this thing that's happening in my head? You know, how do I change this interaction that I'm having that I don't want to have, and it's still jumping out of me? So, and here he says again, love is the answer. One of the ways of attainment is of a necessity. Well, he says, first of all you have to do is drop the undesired thing from your thought. Well, let me see you do that. Drop it from your thought, okay? You got that? Drop it from your thought. Forgive ourselves and start anew. So every moment is starting anew. Every day is starting anew. Every relationship is starting anew. Every time I open my mouth is starting anew. We must never even think of it again. Let me see you do that. Don't even let it come up. Let go of it once and for all. So, you know, this is information. This is maybe knowledge. It might get to wisdom, and it can get to embodiment. So how do we do that? One of the ways of attainment is of a necessity, he says, the way of universal love. Once again, love is the answer. Coming to see all as true sons of God, one with infinite mind. We are employing, and this is really important to me, we are employing the same law that God uses. The law of divine love is all that we will ever need. And so that's the bottom line here. That's what he's saying. The bottom line is the law of divine love. Once again, love is divine givingness and is innate within us. It is eternal. It is personal. It is unconditional. And is the self-evident good. So I want to share with you, I come from a background of where we used to testify, you know, and I understand that so much more now in my life when I used to go out. I really understand that. So I'm going to testify a little bit here and tell you my story. And there's a song that's going in my mind when I was writing this. The song started, and I thought I wrote just a little piece, one line from it, just to keep me into the flow of it. But I'm gonna share it with you now. It's just a line from a song. There is a love inside of us all, and I don't know if you know there's a love inside of us all. I just thought I'd tell you there is a love. And it goes on like that. It's kind of like a chant. And that song is right there. There's a love inside of us all. I just thought I'd tell you. I just want to share that. Mm-hmm. So last summer and into the fall, the center that I call my spiritual home was in turmoil. I and many others encountered the appearance of discord, of disharmony, of distrust, of lack, of contempt, of rudeness, of fear, of anger, of hurt. You just name it, and somebody could say, that's me, and I could say that too. Disappointment. So I did, as I have done many times in my life, I set out to, in a word, fix it. Now, that is very egoistic, I know, but it didn't feel like, it felt like something has to happen here. Somebody's got to do something. Somebody's got to save this. This, you know, this can't be. This can't fall apart like this. You know, so I set out with myself to try to fix it. I wanted to have a group of people together for spiritual nourishment and connectedness, and that could build, and then we would all be interconnected, and that would work, and it would just be lovely. So I started down that path, and it failed. It failed really big. To my surprise, and I thought I was doing a worthy, honorable, good thing, and kaput. So I went through victimization and blame around the fact that it didn't work. And before I finally landed, after a few months, on the fact that I just needed to be still, that I did not know what was going on. I was looking at things and interpreting them here, and I did not know the large picture. I needed to be still. And I really wasn't accustomed to being still in turmoil. It's like, oh, I need to fix this. I'm the oldest of nine. I know how to fill in the blank. You do this, and you go there. And this needs, you know. So I got the plan. I got the, you know. So sitting still was really a challenge. Sitting still and not contributing so much to what was happening at the same time, telling my part, and all of that was not easy. I was doing instead of being. Only I didn't know that at the moment. But it's the moment that I got still, I recognized the pattern. I said, here I am again. How did I get back to this place of this overdeveloped sense of responsibility for the world? And then and then believing that and going on with all this activity to back that up. So I'm sitting and just being still. And I came across what I call an open door that really blessed my life. I was one day in February, I was online looking through the archive of a magazine that I wanted to resubscribe to, and I ran across an article that was entitled, It's Good to Give. The article said that giving doesn't only strengthen our social bonds and make you feel good, it can impact your health. And it went on to tell this story about a woman whose name was Cammie Walker. Cammie was in her early 30s. She was newly married, had just gotten married in Mexico on a beach and had a two-week beautiful honeymoon. Came back 2 weeks later. She was working a high-powered job with an ad agency. Came back and discovered that she got a diagnosis that she had been stricken with multiple sclerosis and a deep case of it. And as you know, it's an incurable, supposedly incurable neurological disease, or that's how it's labeled. Cammie lost the use of her hands, and then she lost vision in one eye. She had fatigue and numbness that was debilitating, and within 2 years she had to quit her job. She developed an addiction to prescription drugs, and she was completely dependent on her new husband. One night in a state of depression, she phoned a friend. The friend's name is, I'm just going to call her first name, Mbali. She's a South African medicine woman, and she had, they had worked together. And Bali was a pioneer in the alternative medical medicine movement in San Francisco. At any rate, Cami called her, and Bali gave her a prescription. She said, "You must give away 29 gifts in 29 days. One gift a day. 29 gifts in 29 days." Well, here's Cami, who could barely walk, couldn't use her hands, had lost everything in her estimation. Her life was pretty much over. She's very depressed. And she says, "I couldn't get out of bed, so how was I going to give something to somebody every day?" And Mbali told her, "It doesn't have to be a material thing. It can just be a kind word." So on day one, Walker decided to give the gift of her time and attention to a friend who was in a more advanced stage of MS. Her friend was ecstatic to hear from her, and they made a plan to get together. And so Cami said, she thought, okay, it does feel good to give, because she felt good after she made that phone call. She was smiling, and she was feeling a little bit more lifted. She said, okay, it does feel good. And she decided to go out of the house and treat herself to breakfast. And she recounts how what that meant. You know, it took hours for this to happen, for her to make this happen. And out of the blue, she got a phone call to do a consulting project. Had not worked in 2 years, didn't know anybody knew. This person knew that, but she got a phone call just out of the blue right after this. After she had made her phone call, she took herself to celebrate out to breakfast, and someone anonymously paid for her breakfast. She's like, something's up. Something's definitely up. So I won't go into all the 29 gifts and the 29 days, but on the 29th day, she chronicled these experiences, and she launched an online site challenging anybody who would to join her in this endeavor, in this giving spirit. 17,000 people in 43 countries signed up. She chronicled the 29 days, and it became a bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list. 29 days, 29 gifts. So we all know when we become conscious that the giving consciousness, the givingness, is pouring out in our lives. It feels like grace. You say, something is up. This is amazing. What's happening? We get God bumps. And we feel the light of an awareness that we didn't have before. It's like an awakening. And this was one of those moments for me. I'm sitting there just reading this stuff and saying, oh, my goodness. And I didn't know why I was so taken with this. I mean, you hear miracle stories all the time, but this really just really grabbed me. And I'm still thinking, you know, what am I going to do? And these people, and, you know, I have a place and the people. I want things to be different in my life, and I can't make it happen because it involves everybody and all of that. But that day was my day one. Somehow it caught me, and I said, I probably need this. This is not an accident that I went online and just stumbled on this thing, you know. So one thing that was not in the article, but it was like a download from the universe for me. I knew that, even as I read that, I knew that I needed to give. I knew I needed to give. I didn't understand it much or anything, but I just said, "This, I'm in a mess here. I need to do this." And it felt like a real push. It felt like, oh, there's something in me that really wants to go in that direction. And I knew intuitively that I needed to give without any attachment to the outcome. Because of that thing of, you know, fixing and saving and manipulating and all of that, I can go right in there and not even know I'm there. But if I have no attachment to an outcome, that gives me a little bit more freedom. So it just felt right to me, not, you know, the words that I would put on it now, or I knew I had to give, but not in any way to do anything, just to do it. And I also knew that anonymity would work well for me. You know, just give something anywhere, not even figuring out whether it fit or anything like that. So before I acted, I got such a lift. Before I acted, I was just alive with this thing. I mean, in an hour, I was just, you know, I felt, okay, I'm in something. And it was just a real powerful impulse. And I was really, really grateful. And I call that a self-evident good. Of course, I didn't make that connection at all then. But the givingness is a self-evident good. You know it when you feel that. It's self-evident. You don't have to get explained. It doesn't have to be explained. You just know it. You feel it. It's a part of who you are, and it comes up. This thing about giving without attachment to the outcome that was intuitive for me, I believe that's the impersonal part. It's impersonal and it's unconditional. So if it's unconditional and impersonal, it just out there, it doesn't matter. And here is the only thing that matters. So that's how I started my day one. So I didn't know what I would do, or and everything I thought of was fixing. Everything I thought, you know, I should do this for my daughter. I should call up. Or, you know, they need, it was really difficult just to let go of the usual mindset. So on day one, I was doing my laundry in the laundry room in my building, and there was a sock on the floor over there somewhere. It was just a little kid sock. And for whatever reason, that was my opportunity. I picked it up. It wasn't about cleaning the room. It wasn't about order. It wasn't about, I did have to quiet the judge and the censor, you know, that about, because things like that, you know, should I be doing this or not doing this? You know, all of that, I had to just quiet all that. Mm-hmm. I went and picked up the sock and put it, there's a little lounge that you put stuff in, people lose it, and I put it over there. And that was it. That was day one. But when I did that, I knew I was in a different consciousness. I felt it. I felt like, it wasn't like I did something, it was just I gave something. Something was flowing out of me. So that was my day one. On day two, I left a bouquet of tulips on the doorstep of an acquaintance of mine who another friend told me she was housebound because she didn't have a car. She didn't have a car and didn't know when she was going to get one. And it just occurred to me. And because it occurred to me, here's an opportunity. I jumped on it. And I drove out to Lanham, Maryland and left the tulips on her doorstep. Not worrying about whether she wanted them or not, what she might think, and none of that, who might have done it, none of that. I just wanted to do that part. And it was just wonderful just to do that. Nobody knew. I mean, it was just, once again, that giving consciousness. On day three, I woke up, I looked in my journal to figure out, you know, when what happened, but on day three, I came awake with the realization, and you know how that can be sometimes. Mm-hmm. You come awake in the morning and it's already there. The sun is already here. And so on day three, I awoke to the realization that I could give away the experience of peace and connectedness. Wow. And it was just like, I just woke up and it was there that I could give it away. Just give it away. And it wasn't a rule. It wasn't a principle to me. It was something that felt like it was flowing. So all this time I was trying to figure out how to get that. So I could give away my time and my energy and my attention and whatever else came up. Wherever I got a yes, the door would be open, wherever that was. It could be at the center where I was. It could be in my building. It could be on a corner, wherever. But I could give that. And most important, I needed to ask permission to give it somewhere and not be attached to that outcome. Mm-hmm. They said no, mm-hmm. Fine. If they said, here are all the conditions, fine, whatever. But not be attached to, you know, we should have asked this one because they're going to, none of that. So, giving without any attachment to the outcome. And then also giving it, and I can say this in retrospect, not for the purpose of doing something, of growing anybody's consciousness, of getting a group together, of keeping my license, you know, being good in the world, none of that, for none of those reasons, just for the sake of giving. And so on that same day, I got up and I contacted the minister at the center where I was and with whom I had had some rough water recently and some rough road, and I was in the process of releasing, and I told her that I wanted to come and speak to her. And I did on day four. On day four, I asked if I could facilitate an evening meditation at the center for whomever would come, and she said yes. There is a love inside of us all. I just thought I'd tell you. So the mere idea of opening up to the possibility each week of sitting in stillness and allowing it to be, just allowing it to be, filling me with a sense of freedom and of humility and gratitude and abundance, that was everything. That is everything. And whether or not anybody came, I was no longer in lack of connection. I felt connected and nourished. You know, just I could sit in the room. That's all that was necessary for me. Mm-hmm. I was connected and nourished. I was connected to everything. So here I'm looking for, you know, how I can make this little group and this whole universe, this pouring this givingness out to me, giving without attachment. So day one, picking up the clothes, I had a clear shift upward. I was more accepting of myself that I could even do this without attachment. On the day that I left the tulips, a publisher emailed me to say that he was interested in the manuscript that I had been working on for several years. Mm. A friend of a friend of a friend, okay? On day four was when the minister said yes. On day 18, there are many things in between, but on day 18, I gave someone whom I love dearly my integrity. I told him the truth about the pretenses and games that we'd been playing for many, many years, and that I was abandoning all my efforts to try to fix or save him. And on that very day, he checked himself into a treatment and recovery facility. There is a love mm-hmm. inside of us, all of us, all of us. That's all I tell you. So if we want never to think of lack at all, we have to focus on not so much for me, not so much, now what is it I'm supposed to do, right thinking through what is the right thinking, but focusing on the picture of right thinking. So what is the picture of right thinking? If I'm in lack, that picture is me giving away something all the time. That's the picture of right thinking. So I don't have to process so much the knowledge that I have and keep it up here, but get my heart open, and then that right picture, and then I'm in that consciousness. So in that picture, I'm giving away something all the time with no attachment. If we want nothing but loving relationships, we must, and you've heard this a million times, act as if. But what is that picture? So for me, in the thinking about the givingness, and love is the givingness, it is giving away that. So giving away every day some compassion, some little kindness, a gesture, a smile in the elevator, you know, a pat on the head to a kid, looking at a clerk in the eye at the store and saying, have a good day. You know, just whatever it is, picking up a sock on the floor. Prosperity, giving away whatever your gift is, your talent. You know, you sing, you know, stand in the elevator and say, oh, what a beautiful morning. You know, whatever your thing is, give it away. You know, whatever you think it is, or whatever it isn't, you know, just give away whatever that is, so that when we talk about prosperity, you know, we're not talking about just material things, but whatever it is you have, just give it. And to me, that's focusing on the picture of what am I giving today, and when the opportunity comes, I'm right there. That's living in that. So if you miss opportunities to give away money, there was a time that I used to carry a dollar, so if a homeless person asked me, I could give them a dollar. And sometimes I'd be really upset because I didn't have the dollar in my hand, because I'd want to do that. And that was me really wanting to work that muscle. But I say, and I say now, that's nothing wrong with that. And I say now, if you want to give away money and the opportunity doesn't look like it's there, give it to the air. Throw it out the car window, leave it on the counter somewhere, put it in the phone booth, leave it, because there's no attachment to it. You're just doing your thing. You're not trying to, you know, that thing that is coordinate everything we see has the capacity to coordinate who needs the money, you know, the $20 bill that you put on the ground or whatever. Let it go. And I've done that. Just let it go out the car window. Just, you know, put the bills in your hand and just keep on driving. And it'll go where it needs to go. And it doesn't need to go anywhere. There's no end to it. So it's what I need to do, what we need to do. Okay. So giving away something without attachment to the outcome each day will get us in that state of being, as opposed to doing, a state of being, a state of givingness. It becomes our habit, our way of being. It opens our heart. It changes our frequency. And with constancy, it moves us into the experiential alignment with love. The experiential alignment with love. And I am one of the people who can give you chapter and verse from here. But the experiential alignment with love, you know when you're in it. And so that givingness can do that. In this vibration, nothing can prevail against us or against that, because there is nothing else. And this is the new attitude that Holmes is talking about. This is the new attitude. This is the shift in conviction that gets us from belief to knowing. Love is the divine givenness. There's a love inside of us all. We all have the same ways, we all have in some ways demonstrated that giving this muscle demonstrates the law of circulation. We know the law of circulation. You give it, it returns to you. The law of giving and receiving, the law of attraction. Once again, we know that about giving, you know, it comes back to you, attract what you're holding in mind. And in Cammie's case, it shifts our mind, takes our mind off our own dilemma. It emphasizes our connection and interdependence that we have with each other. And in spiritual economics, you know that book, Spiritual Economics, Eric Butterworth says, and I really like this. It's in the chapter that he talks about tithing. And it is a little bit controversial, I think, but I so latch on to that. He says that giving is really, he describes giving as giving way to divine flow. That's what giving is, period. And so we can practice it with pledging and tithing and all that, but it's really about giving way to divine flow. So we don't get caught up in the how-to and the where it's going and to what it is. So this, again, is the change attitude, which principle says is the way to transcend all those other conditions. In my opinion, the truly major benefit of developing a giving consciousness is this. Giving is the practice of letting go. And letting go is the practice of non-resistance. That sometimes can feel contradictory, acceptance, resisting nothing. Letting that, for me, it means letting everything be as it is and letting everyone be as they are. Now, that's a real biggie. That's a real biggie as far as I'm concerned. But I know this from just my own, and you know this too. You know this too. Everything that I'm saying, you already know. And so we're just together in this. I know that giving this consciousness, when you're in that flow, when I'm in that flow, when we're in that flow, that we are letting go and we are not resisting. And wherever we can bring that to any situation, it is non-resistance. It just flows. It's just harmonious. So, it sounds contradictory. It isn't. The universe is always, always unfolding as it should. The universe is for us. There's nothing against us. So letting everything be as it is includes our feelings, our emotions, and here's a big one, letting our thoughts be as they are, letting our beliefs be as they are, letting them be as they are in any particular moment, not feeding them nor fighting them, just letting them be. It doesn't mean that we are identifying with these thoughts and beliefs and perceptions that are all out of line. We're not identifying, but we're letting them come up, and we're not starting to push them down, run from them, or make the big story and drama out of it. We're not feeding them or fighting. We're just letting them go. So we don't deny anger. But we don't become anger either. And we don't berate ourselves for an emotion that arises. We let it come to the surface. We let it pass. Everything in this realm comes to pass. Those things are not who we are. In our today's readings, here's what Holmes has to say. There's often an undercurrent of thought which either neutralizes or destroys whatever helpful thoughts we have set in motion in our moments of greater strength. Once again, those that undercurrent, that undertow of thought that negates in some ways where we really want to go. And we're not always aware of it. It's not always conscious. But it jumps up, and there it is. And you think, how did this happen? Eckhart Tolle says it like this. Past conditioning gives rise to unconscious assumptions. These are assumptions, and they disrupt our natural state of well-being and are generally responsible for what we call unhappiness. So assumptions like those people over there are dangerous, marriage doesn't work, people always try to take advantage of me, nobody appreciates me, there's not enough money, our family has heart trouble, you know, all that stuff that's going underneath the surface, all of that is pulling us, that undercurrent, that undertow that's pulling us in the direction we don't want to go into. Centuries ago, Rumi said it this way in his poem, The Guest House, which you probably know, but I'm going to read it. The guest house. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. And he says, welcome and entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of all its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. And here is the biggie. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. Mm-hmm. He may be clearing you out. Don't push it away. Don't deny it. Don't ignore it. Well, maybe ignore is not quite the right word, but don't deny it. Let it come in. Let it come, not necessarily become that, but let it come to the surface. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door, laughing, and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. When we accept those guests, those thoughts that we don't want to have, this behavior, the attitudes, the thoughts, the words, all the stuff that we put out there, when we accept them, we bring the light of awareness to them. Acceptance keeps us in the present moment. Once I say, oh, this is me being angry, I'm present then. Our moment of power, that's my moment of power. Awareness means that we become the observer of our mind and not its servant. We're not identified with those contents of the mind. Acceptance shifts the focus from what seems to be generated outside of me, outside of ourselves, what somebody is doing to us or what is happening to us, to what we're generating from inside ourselves, what is happening by us as us. In order to greet the guests that come to the door, we need not give them power by fighting them or feeding them. We just let them be. They are messengers for us. They come to let us know that we can be at peace no matter what knocks at the door. We can be at that stillness. As long as we don't identify with the visitor, we've moved to that observer territory, the present moment. We are bringing presence to the moment, knowing that everything comes to pass. And from this place, we can replace the error with the truth. In the textbook, in the Science of Mind textbook, Holmes says, when Jesus said, resist not, he meant that non-recognition of evil is the only way to avoid it. This is true according to the law of cause and effect. For what we persist in recognizing, we persist in holding in place. That which we refuse to recognize, we neutralize and is no longer there so far as we are concerned. So using non-resistance as a tool rather than fighting it or feeding it, we bring the light of awareness to our thoughts, beliefs, emotions, perceptions, feelings. We bring presence to it, and in presence, we touch the infinite that is within us, and therefore we're able to see it in everybody else. This allows us to be in that place. And so about acceptance, Holmes says, if we do not at the present time love all people, then we must learn how to do it. And the way will become easier when all condemnation is gone forever. And we behold only good. He says, This will be a hard thing to do, but if we remember that we are working out the science of being, though it may seem long and hard at times, we sooner or later do it, and once done, it is done forever. There is a love inside of us all. I just thought I'd tell you. Namaste.